Welcome to Tonic Boom, a specialist capital markets podcast series brought to you by Tonic, the expertise-led consultancy dedicated to giving firms more. Join our host, our resident Tonic Ninjas, and industry experts as we drop the mic on the hot market topics across high-profile domains such as margin, post-trade, treasury, risk, digital, legal, sustainability, and more. More expertise, more trust, more achieved. Ready for your dose of Tonic?
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tonic Boom. This is actually part two of our Digital Assets, the Collateral Catalyst episode. So, welcome back to Greg, Sam, and Stephen. And why don't we jump straight back in? So I guess maybe if we were going to, we're not going to get too nerdy, but if we sort of double clicked one more level and started to bring to life some of the key digital asset trends and use cases that we see playing out on the street at the moment, obviously with that lean on collateral. Yeah, could you guys help me there?
Yeah, I think the most obvious one to touch on, because there has been a lot of industry press about it and a few people have done it, you know, client and provider pairs, and it's a worthy endeavor in its own right, is the tokenization of money market funds. So tokenizing from the point of issuance. So you take a share class or a money market fund and you make the register for that, the entitlement to that property digital. And going back to what I was saying, why do you give collateral and receive collateral? To protect against unforeseen circumstances and principally counterparty default. But you have to have an entitlement of some sort to a piece of property, whether that's on a title transfer or a pledge basis, in order to give you that protection. Money market funds are already sort of playing into that transfer agency space of potential future digitization of the records of investor ownership of those funds anyway. So it's a good nexus of a place to start upstream. So you are bringing an asset class into a digitally native space that previously wasn't, has two benefits. But what it also does in terms of, we talked, Stephen, didn't we, about the interplay between collateral management as a practice and liquidity management as a practice and a need, it is increasing your pool of liquidity. Now, there are legal debates to be had and regulatory debates, people higher minded than me, about the things like the haircuts that are applicable to a money market fund. But fundamentally, a money market fund is a regulated product made up entirely of extremely high quality and extremely liquid assets. It therefore makes sense to provide the marketplace with that asset to use alongside their cash and their equities and their high grade debt as collateral. And I think that's been a really positive thing for the industry. And I think that is a trend that will continue. I remember hearing, it was at a conference in September, someone said digital assets are sort of doing, or digital collateral is currently doing small things in small places. Great proofs of concepts already been done. And I think and hope that we will see that continue to grow. And I think the next big thing to look through beyond that, though, is other asset classes. So the money market funds one is almost bringing in an entirely new pot of assets for the world to use. I'm talking very broad brushes here, yeah, as collateral.
It's a key point here is that there's really limited money market fund usage as collateral today.
Yes.
I think that's a point that we didn't touch on earlier in terms of sort of the why the collateral catalyst is that this is something, you know, a way that we can bring more assets into use as collateral. So it's an expansion aspect that says money market funds aren't significantly used as collateral today because of various traditional infrastructure challenges, effectively, not because, you know, we can't look through and see that they're a good asset. Although, as Greg touched on, there are aspects there that we need to assess in terms of capital treatment, because they haven't really been used thus far. And so it's not been something that people have been pressuring. But yet that expansion of collateral eligibility to include money market funds or to include assets that maybe are harder to move around. You know, we go into Asia and we talk into ID markets and we talk into things that don't move well, shall we say, you know, in a traditional manner. Well, we can bring in, you know, a broader scope of assets here that is something that will help the liquidity aspect that you touched on. Now, I would say what the money market fund example is doing is bringing in a combination. I think the reason that people have looked at it as a great use case is it says, okay, not only am I looking at a traditional sort of collateral mechanism or process, but I'm also looking at bringing in a digital asset. I think for me, that's great in terms of expanding where we're getting to, but the big win can be gained by transforming what we do in the traditional collateral space. Yes, absolutely. Do we want to bring that asset class in and move that pool of collateral, you know, non-cash collateral from 25 trillion to 20 whatever trillion? For sure, we want to enable that for our clients. And we've seen with the LDI crisis, well, there are absolutely good reasons for doing it. But equally, we also want to, you know, get the benefits of that mechanism applied to the 25 trillion in the first place.
I think what the money market fund use case does is it, in theory, if you can develop that at scale, is it frees up other assets for deployment towards higher value activities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So whether that's lending, whether that is servicing prime relationships, you know, you put money into money market funds because you want to keep it safe while you look for something else to do with it. Yes, yields have improved over the last 5 years in the interest rate environment, but it's fundamentally a safe store of value. Why would you, therefore, by default, not look to use that where you could as collateral instead of maybe higher value assets that could be deployed for something else? So I think that that's the key thing with money market funds. We could almost do a podcast series on this, and you can invite other banks in to talk about what they've been doing. There's a whole school of thought about money market funds. But I think let's park them there because we've sort of touched on the why they are relevant. To the point Sam made a moment ago, there is then the existing, let's call it established collateral asset classes, right? Forget cash for a moment, but stocks and bonds that are known and loved in the collateral landscape for their certainty, for their liquidity, for their reliability and lack of volatility of price, and therefore their usability as collateral. What's the big problem you have with using those? I think principally it's the mobilization of them somewhere useful. So a treasury, right? Take a simple use case. A US treasury is a US treasury. Let's not get too macro about what might happen in the US and with their et cetera. But a US treasury, a US treasury, and it is a widely accepted liquid piece of collateral. If you have more than one settlement place for your collateral, so you have a few bilateral counterparties, you have a tri-party environment, and you have a prime, or you have two tri-party environments, once the asset is where it needs to be, it's great. So take a tri-party environment. Once your asset is in tri-party, tri-party agents are fantastic at making sure you have the best fit of your collateral against the agreements that they are collateralizing. They are also good at mobilizing between receive. Let's say you've done a stock loan and you've received treasuries in, they can mobilize that into tri-party for, you know, use against other exposures that you have. So once you're in that environment, it's great. It's mobilizing from your principal trading location into these environments that is causing those frictions, which when you look at things like T+1 sales, digital ledger technology can perhaps begin to overcome. So, you know, when we are thinking about our digital solution, we've said it, you know, in the meetings we've had amongst ourselves with our wider product teams, nirvana state really for buy-side clients of a custodian bank like State Street is your assets on our balance sheet at custody do not need to move elsewhere between legal entities or externally in order to fulfill the fundamental needs and object of collateralization, which is transfer of property entitlement, which protects people in the event of default. That, I think, and this is where it starts to get really nerdy, I think, in terms of the ledger technology itself and how a tokenized representation of a non-digital asset gives you that property certainty. But I think that is where that use case is going and will provide a great deal of liquidity benefits to clients as we move towards the realization of that over the next few years.
I think of just in sort of a bond environment, you know, a classic example is the fact that you might hold a bond domestically and you might need to then deliver it through Euroclear as assessment mechanism. Even that transfer is frustratingly slow and causes significant liquidity and assessment challenges. Equally, the point that you raise there in terms of sort of the tri-party mechanisms is all about how do we get volume into one place to enable optimization by having this sort of centralization. So a lot of what we've all been doing is trying to work out, say, central data warehouses in order to enable optimizers to have a purview of that whole environment of your total assets, your total liabilities. Well, tokenization is enabling you to spread that from being in one place, use something, you know, we have an inventory management solution that enables us to look across a buy-side's multitude of funds in order to source from those funds and then to deliver out to multiple liabilities. So all of that into a tokenized environment comes into a frictionless place. And so the level of optimization that you can take, and I know that word gets overused, but it takes off significantly. And I think that's something that is really powerful in here. As you say, there's no need to move your asset.
I know what you're getting at, right? So it's the, I remember years ago hearing a phrase, theory without practice is empty, practice without theory is blind. And I think when you get to optimization, that rings true, right? You can look at your liabilities from an exposure perspective and theoretically work out the best manner to allocate your assets against those. The practice of that, though, what gives that life is the ability to actually do that in a way which doesn't cause settlement friction, which doesn't result in fails management on any sales if you wish to substitute, which doesn't result in, like you said, oh, that asset, oh, I settled that in German domestic and actually they want to deliver to Euroclear. If you can remove that piece, then your theoretical, most optimal collateral landscape gets closer to realization.
Yeah, and I know this sounds a bit geeky, but the reality is that if you can remove 50 to 60% of your settlement cost as a custodial bank, that is a massive industry win.
And I think, sorry, Sam, picking on that, I think something we're going to get onto is stuff for the buy side. So message jumping ahead to a buy side client would be, have a look at your custody rate card. How much is a movement of an asset in, let's take US, take Euroclear, take UK, and take some of the other G7 countries. How much are your custodian going to charge you for every move in and out of that asset that you do? There's the use case for thinking about those.
I'd say get into the, you know, the developing countries. Look at how much that costs you to move an asset. The costs on that side are significant.
These are awesome insights. And I think we're helping tell the story of just dripping in these different challenges and then linking them back to real use cases, which is lovely. I guess bringing it back to collateral specifically, hear you loud and clear, like what's moved as collateral today, predominantly cash and HQLA, predominantly. And there's variations across different products. And if we really needed to, and we don't have time today, we could break it down by bilateral derivatives versus cleared versus SetClear versus repo. But the direction of travel is there's a huge amount about HQLA and government bonds specifically that are moved as collateral outside of those cash requirements. And I think that's where you were going, Greg. You were saying, look, there are these use cases such as money market funds and others, but there's also this huge rump of collateral that is a prime target for tokenization and the benefits that we receive, whether settlement timing, optimization, access to new markets, reduced cost base overall are colossal. Are there any other specifics that you guys want to zoom in on just in terms of those use cases or where State Street particularly is focused before we flip to some of the practicalities of firms getting started?
So look, I guess in specifics of what we're building and what we're building on for our clients is the capability to, you know, tokenize bonds and equities. And we're looking at scalable solutions for 2026 to enable that across OTC exposures. Now, equally, cleared requirements are coming. So that's something that we're looking to build on towards the end of that initiative. But I think we've all done our use cases. It's the fact that we can do this in a scalable manner. At the beginning, you asked, you know, what's changed? Well, obviously in the US recently, there's been an opening of regulation and a drive from Donald Trump to enable everyone to use DLTs to really access the market here. So that's for us has been certainly an accelerator to pick up in terms of our digital custody side. So that's something that I think you'll be seeing and hearing a lot more from State Street on in the near future. And then I would suggest actually one of the things that really is stepping back from the level rather than drilling in is what do you need to do in order to realize those benefits? You not only do you need to have your collateral on a digital ledger. Not only do you need to think about how you do digital debt issuance, for example, or native assets, not only do you need to be thinking about a digital transfer agent to enable money market funds as use collateral, but secondly, we need to be thinking about our onboarding processes, how we get smart contracts into this, because that's where we enable scale in terms of onboarding and optimization at source. How do we enable that with, you know, one of the things that Stephen, you touched on earlier, and maybe it's be good for you to follow on it, you know, bringing AI into the picture in terms of document interpretation. bringing bots in to enable better use and quicker use of processes? How do we enable the market connectivity, get off email, you know, get off in some case, faxes, whether, you know, still in place? So a significant amount of manpower on our side. And we pride ourselves on our dispute management in terms of, you know, that interaction between a counterparty and us on behalf of the client in order to resolve disputes. Well, you know, there's a great use case there for, you know, implementing AI and bots and new digital workflows to improve that process. So I think what you need to do is you need to step back and say, you know, the whole process is going to change here. How do I gain the benefits? I guess, you know, talk to your service providers. I think that's something that, get engaged in the narrative, join the industry forums and come and talk to us about the way in which digital is going to move forward in the future.
Yeah, I guess stating the obvious, but partnering with providers that are fully invested in digital across all those streams that you guys have described today so that you're future-proofed as the end client. But yeah, Stephen, maybe as a buy-side firm with very limited experience of this world, particularly digital assets, are there some practical next steps you'd recommend?
Yeah, definitely. So I think Sam touched on a couple of them there in terms of definitely get involved in the industry forums. I guess digital assets are always one of the key topics, if not the key topic, at any sort of forum you go to in terms of the panels, events. You're going to hear from different perspectives of market participants. So whether that's CCPs or some of your competitors on the buy side, they're going to have quite differing digital priorities. So you'll get a good view of all of those there. And then if you want something a bit more tailored to the business you're doing, like Sam said, speak to some of your service providers, because they're going to start to have a suite of solutions from issuance, TA, digital fund accounting, collateral, digital repo, and sort of any services that are tailored to your needs. And the final one, I guess, maybe most importantly, because this can be sort of quite a significant part of the journey, is engage with your legal counsel early. So a lot of people who have worked on digital projects will probably realize that this is sort of a bulk of some of the work, particularly if you're looking at digitally native assets. They can sort of start to introduce a few new regulatory challenges. So it's essential there to start early on it. On the traditional side, some more of the existing regulations can sort of be applied, but there's still the analysis to sort of ensure that you're complying with those as well.
As I think we've often said, in good times and bad times, lawyers always get paid.
But I think it's a really important one, right? Understand your specific needs with regards to your collateral landscape. Consult with good legal counsel, particularly if you're on a buy side, in terms of what your prospectus is saying, but your own legal constraints, not necessarily your suppliers and your counterparties. Understand your counterparty's appetite for using these assets as collateral and work with your suppliers, so your custodians, your collateral managers, your middle office, whoever.
Your expertise-led consultancies.
The anti-consultancies in particular.
I believe so.
About how this is applicable to your operating model.
Boom, shall I say.
Very good. So guys, conscious that we've covered a lot today, huge amount of ground, and I think there's a load of topics that in a nerdy way we'd love to unpick further. But just to summarise, I guess, key conclusions for our listeners. Let me do a little bit of that, but then it'd be good to hear maybe in 30 seconds where you think the industry is going next, specifically for collateral and digital assets. But yeah, I guess at a super high level, we zoomed in on collateral. I think we zoomed in on collateral because of a combination of the high usage, the high inefficiencies that we continue to see across the market, and high cost base, frankly. And I think digital assets, you guys have proven, give high value across all of those challenges today. We started to break down some of those use cases. We talked about money market funds. We talked about the broader collateral pool of HQLA that no doubt over the years are going to give all of us huge benefit as we start to transition to the DeFi world. It's not going to happen overnight. I think that's the point that you guys are stressing. This is a long game, but teaming up with the right folk and starting those conversations now so that you're in a good position to beat the curve and start to realize those benefits feels like an obvious starting point. But yeah, maybe just going around the room just to finish up on any final closing thoughts or direction of travel.
If you're asking me what's next, effectively, then I'm going to say that maybe it's not such a long haul. I think it's here, it's now, and I think next year you're going to see significant size and scale in tokenized collateral. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're doing at the moment is spending time going, and as you know, I'm sure any good service provider would, we're going talking to our clients, but listening to our clients, understanding where their challenges are, where their costs are, understanding how we can adapt this to solutionize for their challenges. And so where's it going? I think it's here, tokenized collateral. Yeah, it's happening.
I don't think I'm going to dwell on where this might be going, but I'm going to maybe rehash a little bit what we did a minute ago in terms of things for people to think about. I think if you are particularly on the buy side and you're listening to this or you're beginning to think about this subject, my overarching plea would be don't be put off by the amount of thinking that's been in the industry about it, the jargon. Like we said, engage with people that know this subject matter, but don't be afraid of it. We've had this conversation before. My background was not collateral before I came into this role. It has always been one of those over there, it's a little bit peculiar. The people that are in it are a little bit nerdy, but it is not subject matter that is actually as inaccessible as it maybe looks from the outside. And there is a real cost benefit to you and your firm for taking proactive steps in this space, right? And digital is the frontier of that. But, you know, we have a use case recently where we had onboarded a client, and nothing to do with the digital, but just in terms of the thinking about collateral. And by looking at the efficiencies of some of the cash processes they had in their cleared landscape, or rather the inefficiencies they had, and optimizing the way they settled their cash and calculated the needs for their cash, we freed up $72 million of liquidity. Wow. That's $72 million, and that's without doing anything particularly complicated. That's real money for that client to go and do better things with. There will be a wealth of this out there for the buy side. And some of these somewhat, you know, dry topics we touched on today, asset mobilization, right? Settlement certainty, settlement optimization, cross-asset optimization. Breaking those down into constituent parts, looking at them against your operating model and beginning to think about how you deliver on changing them, free up real value for your firm, be that balance sheet, be that fee money, be that assets and cash deployed as collateral and margin.
Thank you, Greg. Stephen, anything else side?
Yeah, just one sort of closing thought in terms of where the industry might be going next. I know it's another buzzword, but interoperability. So at the moment, what firms building their own disparate DLT networks get you sort of halfway there to all of the efficiencies. These are going to be over the next few years in terms of how they're all integrated together. So we're seeing some of the DLT vendors sort of having the ability to connect different chains now as well. Also seeing custodians build sort of networks of sub-custody accounts with each other to avoid some of these market movements. So that's where we're going to start to see the real sort of connection of all the pools of liquidity in sort of the end state.
As a tonic boom ending, a mic drop with interoperability. It is, you know, the new word. Go on is optimization. It's interoperability.
Especially in this context, right? That's super relevant. Thank you so much, guys. Some really great insights from all of you. Much appreciated. Nice to scratch the surface on, I guess, why collateral is that catalyst for digital asset take up. I think key points that all of the guys are stressing is this is happening right now. This isn't something that you should be holding on. The benefits are out there and it's on you to, I guess, start engaging with partners to take steps forward. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next time.
You've been listening to Tonic Boom. Don't forget to like and subscribe to stay up to date on the latest developments and industry opinion across capital markets. Visit thetonicconsultancy.com to see more of our expertise-led insights and end-to-end solutions. Tonic. More expertise, more trust, more achieved.